Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 6:14, we're going to start the show by going around the room and everybody saying something really nice about me. It's a new thing they're doing at the cabinet meeting in D.C. Why wouldn't it work here? We'll get to that in the top six at six. Three very weird developments last night, even for this Trump White House. And on the program today, Rahm Emanuel, the mayor, will be in. I guess there's only one Rahm Emanuel. I didn't need to do Rahm Emanuel. The mayor will be in. Later on in the program, Tom Scher, who wasn't he the original morning guy on The Score?
Yeah.
Yes, he was. Sports guy.
Tom worked here at one time.
Did he?
Yeah, I've known Tom for, 30 years?
Yeah, I've known him for quite a while as well. I didn't realize he was working for the assessor's office.
Cook County Assessor, yes. Yeah.
So he'll be in to dispute what the Tribune wrote last week and what the writer of the piece said on the show.
Yeah, Jason was on with us last week.
And I'm going to try to keep it from going too deep in math that nobody can verify.
Right. Keep it surface.
Right. So what does it mean to the people who are listening? And by the way, I like Tom. I've always liked Tom. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be some beat up Tom fest.
No, but we'll get answers, though.
Right. And I appreciate the fact that he wanted to come on and express, you know, his viewpoint.
Yes.
Steve, can I just say that it's the pleasure of my life to be here with you this morning?
Thank you for that.
Your hair. I love what you've done with your hair today.
Thank you. Anybody else want to chime in?
Oh, are we doing supposed this now?
To do that? Yeah,
I thought
now?
That was after the top six and six.
No. Listen, if you're going to question when the compliment should begin,
you know
compliments
what?
Begin at the beginning of the meeting, which is why Steve just got a raise.
You have a nice glow.
Nice.
I think you have a nice glow about you this morning.
Thank you very much.
He's not a girl. He's not pregnant.
I didn't
still have a glow, though.
Just don't step
on
my
suntan thing.
You know what it is?
You have a glow from radiation
poisoning. Oh, wait, here. I got the best one. You know what it is? You look so happy from having seen Abigail Grace yesterday.
Was good.
Oh, boy.
That was good, yeah.
So do I get a raise now?
So.
You have nice calves.
Yeah, I really do, don't I? Yeah, they're fabulous. Do we have that awkward... It really, when you think about it... Because... I'll just mention this top six at six. Maybe I'll drop it now. But you have to hear this. You have to hear this. Because I don't care how big a Trump supporter you might be. No one does this.
Oh, when they...
Other than Kim Jong-un.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Kim Jong-un has people kind of celebrate him every day and talk about how great he is, and it's all fraudulent and it's all fake. The only way this could have happened is if there were a meeting before the first cabinet meeting. Mm-hmm. And by the way, how about the first cabinet meeting was yesterday? A meeting before the first cabinet meeting where it was stated to the assembled members, whether it was by Reince Priebus or whomever. You know, Melania's in the White House now. Maybe she said it. Everybody has to say something nice about the president. And by the way, when somebody compliments you, doesn't it make you a little uncomfortable?
Yes, completely.
So when you get complimented and you sit there with a big goofy-ass grin on your face for the entire time, who are you kidding? So... This is actual audio from yesterday's first cabinet meeting. I hope you haven't eaten yet.
And Steve, before I play this, I just want to say that it's an honor to breathe the same air that you breathe
thank you very much.
Thank
you very much. You and Steve have a bright future here.
It's glorious.
Thank you very much. That's very, very kind.
Oh, please.
Here you go.
Never has there been a president, with few exceptions, in the case of FDR, he had a major depression to handle, who's passed more legislation, who's done more things than what we've done.
Thank you, Mr. President, and just the greatest privilege of my life is to serve as Vice President to a president who's keeping his word to the American people.
Mr. President, my privilege to be here, deeply honored, and I want to thank you for keeping your commitment to the American workers. Mr. President,
What an incredible honor it is to lead the Department of Health and Human Services at this pivotal time under your leadership. I can't thank you enough for the privilege that you've given me and the leadership that you've shown.
Mr. President, thank you for the honor to serve the country. It's a great privilege you've given me.
On behalf of the entire senior staff around you, Mr. President, we thank you for the opportunity and the blessing that you've given us to serve your agenda and the American people. And
I want to congratulate you on the men and women you've placed around this table. This is a team you've assembled that's working hand in glove for the betterment of America. And I want to thank you for that. These are great team members, and we're on your team.
Thank you, Mr. President. It was a great honor traveling with you around the country for the last year, and an even greater honor to be here serving in your cabinet.
Who does that?
I'm sorry, he said, I didn't hear the women. Are the women
who
coming?
Does that?
Yeah.
No, actually, Mitch McConnell's wife
Betsy
was there.
Betsy DeVos. And Mitch McConnell's wife.
Yeah, she was there. And she complimented him. I don't know what Betsy DeVos said. I assume she complimented him. But you don't just sit there with a goofy-ass smile on your face thinking, well, the people are going to believe this. It says everything you need to know about this president. And yes, you should be frightened.
We're not going to do our morning show meetings this way now, are we?
No.
Because that would be really
no,
weird.
No, because I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy. Who sits there and has 10 people compliment you?
That's ridiculous.
It's even worse when you hear it a second time, too,
yeah.
And over like that. It was
well,
just,
you know what's worse? What's worse is the video when you watch it, because you see these people doing this. And
was
the only
really
one, by the way, the only one that manned up was General Mattis. General Mattis said, thank you for the honor of serving the men and women who serve this country.
Yeah.
And he represented the service folks.
It was bizarre.
How about
absolutely
Ryan's
bizarre.
Priebus blessing? Don't bring God into this. God's busy.
Yeah, right. God's going, hey,
God's
leave
got
me
enough
out of
problems.
This.
A lot of you started.
leave me out of this.
Didn't you have to expect them to bring out like a Thanksgiving turkey? And
yeah, I thought they were holding hands around a table or something. Sure,
you couldn't
like
say that about your mom. Your mom wouldn't let you say it if y'all sat there at Thanksgiving and said how wonderful she was.
No, but you know what? At Thanksgiving, if everyone held hands and actually ate food, that would be kind of neat. There's nothing neat about this.
No, this is not good. This is not good.
I've never seen anything like this.
It's really uncomfortable. That's just one of the three weird things that happened last night. At 6:20, here's Mary.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Item number one, Attorney General Jeff Sessions scheduled to testify today. Don't expect the earth to move. Expect a lot of answers like, well, I didn't see it that way. No, I don't recall. That was not my intent. Those sorts of framings. I'd love it if he just went in and went, you know what? I've had it with this crap as well. Here's what really happened.
And here's my resignation.
Exactly. So Attorney General Jeff Sessions scheduled to testify today, I believe, 2:30?
1:30 our time.
1:30 our time. Fine. And that should be newsworthy. But again, I hope I'm wrong. But I don't expect the news ball to be moved that far. The other two weird things from last night. The president supposedly was talking throughout the White House yesterday about firing Robert Mueller. Now, whether or not he was trying it out as an idea or he was serious about it. A guy named Christopher Ruddy, who is a friend of his, who has run a very right-leaning website called Newsmax, came out and did some press immediately afterwards and said he thought it was a really bad idea. That created a lot of news last night about and created other people from Congress and congressional leaders and folks like that stepping up and saying it's a really bad idea. Trump hasn't owned the fact that it was even an idea. Mm-hmm. It's a horrible idea. It's so bad on the terrible idea scale that they need a new scale for how bad an idea it is.
It's hard to keep track these days of all the bad ideas that are out there.
The spinning is Nixon. Nixon's worrying and going, listen, turn on the History Channel, Donnie.
Mm-hmm.
You don't fire the other guy.
Right.
The ultimate guy looking into whether or not you're innocent or guilty.
After you just lauded him a week ago.
Well, Newt Gingrich, what a hypocrite that dude is.
Ugh.
Newt Gingrich, who is lauding Robert Mueller, now says, don't expect him to be fair. Shut up, Newt. And the final weird thing from the Trumpster last night, you can't hang this one on him yet. Dennis Rodman arrived in Pyongyang, North Korea last night.
How about that?
And he has been sent there by a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a commercial sponsor. I don't frankly don't remember what they do, but they had it. He was wearing their T-shirt and hyping whatever their deal was.
I think isn't it a marijuana cybercurrency? Yeah,
that's right. Like bitcoins to buy weed.
Bitcoins to buy pot. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's hyping them. But in the meantime, he is recognized to be friends with Trump after being on The Apprentice twice. And he said that he thought Donald Trump would be happy that he was there.
Yeah, that he would support his
And he's going to try
arrival.
To meet with Kim Jong-un.
Right.
But don't you just feel a little safer and a little better knowing that he's there?
That's the thing, right? Here's the thing. When he was there and Trump wasn't president, it was dangerous. Well, how about this scenario? What if Kim Jong-un keeps him? Now you might be saying, well, that's not such a terrible thing. Well, now he's a high-profile American citizen that's a hostage. Now maybe you got the match you can light to start all the problems that could cause all the problems related to the crazy fat kid, as
right.
John McCain called him.
And it would all go back to Dennis Rodman.
So World War III.
But he's a
by Dennis Rodman. By Dennis.
Yeah,
Kim Jong-un is a fan of Dennis Rodman, though. I mean, why would he keep him just for fun?
Keep him in his room.
Keep him in his room.
I got my own NBA player.
I think I remember this right. Didn't Kim Jong-un refuse to spend like the last day or two with him on the trip in 2014 because he was so drunk?
Yeah, and wasn't it because also, too, he was upset that he was leaving? He was like mad his buddy was leaving?
Maybe that was it. Yeah. I don't know, but I remember he kind of blew him off at the end. This is a guy, Kim Jong-un, verifiable by international intelligence agencies, killed one of his rivals with an anti-aircraft gun. This is a guy who allegedly fed one of his uncles to a pack of rabid dogs and watched.
And don't forget the needle attack at the airport.
And yes, killed his half-brother at the airport. Mm-hmm. And Dennis Rodman's going over because he's a, quote, friend for life. Now, again, you cannot hang this one on Trump. But if we find out that Trump sent him, oh, my God.
I don't think Trump did. I don't.
Why,
well,
but
you
why?
Know what?
Why? Why don't you think that?
It's off the table now.
Off.
All bets are off.
It's unbelievable. Rahm Emanuel has some political advice for Bruce Rauner. That would be your mayor and your governor. When you like 90% of a proposal, take yes for an answer. The mayor was speaking from the lectern Monday at a traffic safety event on the west side, and he brought up the state budget situation unsolicited. The mayor cited a Springfield State Journal Register story that reported Rauner education advisor Beth Purvis said the governor liked 90% of a school funding formula rewrite bill. Rauner said he plans to veto the legislation, which is on a procedural hold in the Senate, but has passed both chambers. I happen to agree with him.
I agree with him as well.
Because Mike Madigan is not going to move anymore. It doesn't make Mike Madigan right. Matter of fact, it makes Mike Madigan wrong.
Right.
But when you know that you have gotten to a point where the other side is done,
mm-hmm.
And they're not going any farther, take the deal.
Yeah, 90%.
Take the deal, win re-election, and then continue to move.
90% is still an A-.
Just based on what he's... If Rauner can get this budget done and sign this and move forward and get re-elected, he will have a potentially amazing successful run as mm-hmm. governor.
Yeah, absolutely.
But without a budget, forget about it. Jurors deliberated more than 4 hours on Monday in the sexual assault trial of Bill Cosby. They'll come back later today. Kevin Durant led the Warriors to their second NBA title in three seasons. He might be the most fluid big man in the game in our lifetime.
He has as good a shot.
Dribbles like a point guard.
Yep. And it's just a beautiful shot.
And he's 6'11".
Something like that, yeah.
He's just a tree.
Yeah.
And then finally this. Sean P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Zippity-Doo-Dah Combs, tops Forbes 100 highest paid celebrities in 2017. Let me go in reverse order here. My twin, Billy Joel, is 82 on the list. Sean Hannity is 77. Bill O'Reilly is 71. Steve Harvey, 53. Steve Harvey's got more money made more money last year than Bill O'Reilly.
How about that?
J.K. Rowling is number three on the list. Beyonce is number two. And Sean Puff Diddy P. Daddy Zippity-Doo-Dah Combs is number one. Do we know how much he made? Can you guys find that figure out for me? And I'd also like to be annoyed. Tell me how much Steve Harvey made. I got to give Steve Harvey credit. He never stops working. You know, so he's earning his money. I know it's not heavy lifting. It's three or four game shows, a talk show, and a radio show. But the guy works about 18 hours a day.
He just started a new show.
Yeah, like, the Thunderdome.
Yeah.
It's like Shark Tank with a live crowd screaming for who they want funded. Yeah. By the way, I can't reveal it yet, but a friend of ours is going to be on Shark Tank.
Really?
Really? Yeah, a friend of the show. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Someone who's been on the show?
Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact.
I have the list of earnings. Which one did you
want? Sean P. Diddy Puff Daddy ZippityDoo.com.
So that would be $130 million.
And what did Steve Harvey make?
Steve Harvey.
By the way, number 50. What did I say? 53.
Steve Harvey, $42.5
million. Wow.
Bet.
Stern's got to be on the list. What did Stern make last
year? Howard Stern's way up there. Let me go back.
Stern made $100 million, didn't he?
Howard Stern is number 7, $90 million.
Wow.
$90 million. Off year.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, you only made $90 million.
Beyonce, $105 million.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to throw up in my mouth just a little bit, and we'll come back and do the big story after this on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, where Allstate believes good starts young and works towards inspiring the next generation of leaders to reach their full potential and make the world a better place. In honor of that, you can recognize a kid that goes above and beyond for your community, whether we know them or not. It could be just somebody you've heard about that you don't even know. But nominate a kid for a Kid of the Week that ought to be featured here Tuesday mornings on the program. Do this every week. Includes an Amazon gift card, Lou Malnati's Pizza for the kid. And you go to WGNradio.com/contest and submit an entry for a child between 9 and 18 that you think ought to be Allstate Kid of the Week. Tune in every Tuesday to hear the Allstate Kid of the Week. Abigail Grace, my granddaughter, was going to be Kid of the Week, but I couldn't convince her yesterday to watch the Sean Spicerman daily briefing.
And tell everyone again instead what she wanted to listen to.
Well, she wanted to read a book.
Yeah. And then Katy Perry.
And she wanted Katy Perry Roar. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Play Roar, Pops. I'll
play Roar. But I'll get her there, you know, to really enjoy the same. I don't think she completely understands heckling TV where they can't hear you. At 6:44, the actual Kid of the Week, Gabriella, joins us on the phone. Good morning, and how are you?
Good morning.
Yeah, it's early, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially, I'm guessing you're out of school now?
Yep.
So you didn't have to get up, and somebody told you you're Kid of the Week, so you got up for us. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, so you go to Herrick Middle School.
Yep.
What grade are you going to be in the fall?
I'm going to be in eighth grade.
All right. Well, that's big fish in the smaller pond thing, so enjoy your eighth grade year.
Thank
right?
you.
Last year before you go off to high school.
Yeah.
All right, so you collected a bunch of school supplies and donated them. Tell me the story.
So when I was in second grade, we went to Jamaica, and we went on a school tour to one of the schools, like the low-income school. And I noticed that a whole bunch of the kids were, like, sharing pencils and desks, and they had to turn in their school supplies when they were done with them for the day and so that they wouldn't get lost. And so when we got back to the hotel, I said, I really want to do something to help them because that's not anything like what I have back at home. So we got back home and we kind of started collecting smaller then. But then after a while, we started collecting like big time. And then when we went on our last trip, we donated the 2000th book there.
Very cool. And hundreds of pounds of school supplies in all. I know you collect the travel size toiletries and things too for personal hygiene bags for homeless shelters. How many of those have you delivered?
We've delivered around 750 of those bags.
Wow. Hey, Gabrielle, did I hear you donated 2,000 books? More than 2,000 books?
Yeah.
How'd you pack all those up and get those there?
A huge backpack.
Yeah, we get suitcase donations, too. And then so we usually end up bringing, like, 6 suitcases with us whenever we fly. So
that's great.
Very cool. What are you going to do with the rest of your life now that you've accomplished all this?
Well, we're probably going to keep on donating because it's not really always going to be enough. So.
Well, that's great. That's great. And any adults you want to thank that particularly helped you for this?
Yeah.
My mom.
Yeah, she helps us a lot, get everything together. My dad also helps us like with weighing everything. My Nana, she helps me.
Pretty cool.
That's so cool.
Pretty cool.
teachers too.
Pretty cool.
The toiletry idea too is a wonderful idea for the homeless. Yeah. Everything from what, soap to Purell to things like that, Gabriella?
Right. Yeah. We use like shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste. Even though there's not like toothbrushes, we just put in the toothpaste because we heard that like they can just use like their finger for.
Yeah, can't imagine, right?
Yeah.
And it reminds you how lucky you are, and you know how blessed you are to have a place to live and a family that loves you and all that.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you're a good, very tired kid of the week, and we're happy to have you on the show. We got Lou Malnati's Pizza and an Amazon gift card for you. So a small token of thank you for all that you do. So here's what I want you to do. Go back to bed. You don't even have to listen to the rest of the show. You can listen to the podcast later. And then I want you to get up and work more for people.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
That's sweet. Hold on. What a great idea.
Poor kid getting dragged out of bed.
She's like, I already lugged 2,000 books to the school.
You should see the size of that backpack. That sucker's huge. Congratulations to Gabriella Frank, 13 years old from Herrick Middle School, this week's Allstate Kid of the Week.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
652, the U.S. Open comes to Erin Hills in Wisconsin this weekend. Jake was telling me the weather is going to be terrible. Got potential for major thunderstorms both days. That's why I'm excited about the new rule this year. Do you know about the new rule?
What's the new rule?
Even if it's thunder and lightning, they have to stay out and play.
I don't think that's true.
Oh, that's not true?
True,
oh,
Steve.
I believe you.
Makes it much tougher to putt. You know, if there's a huge thunderclap right in the middle of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, it does.
Those two-footers get longer.
Mm-hmm.
You can play Majors Madness, sponsored by the 2017 BMW Championship this golf season. The U.S. Open up this week, and a reminder to go to WGNradio.com/contest to register while there's still time. You'll be given a reminder when you can make your picks for the golfers you think will finish first through 10th for this tournament. Vandeveld, I'll give you a clue here because we're going to pick our majors or our U.S. Open tomorrow.
We are?
Yeah, because you're leaving Thursday, Dave. Is that right?
I will be here Thursday.
Oh, you're working Thursday?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We'll pick them tomorrow anyway. We'll pick the U.S. Open tomorrow.
Okay, cool.
But in the case of the Majors Madness for the BMW, after the tournament, the first place winner gets a pair of tickets to the 2017 BMW Championship at Conway Farm, September 12th through the 17th. And a round of golf for four at the Bolingbrook Golf Club, including range balls and a golf cart, of course. Register and play Majors Madness, sponsored by BMW Championship, at WGNradio.com/contest. And by the way, for all of you, Phil is not playing.
Oh, yeah.
Right. His daughter's graduation, I think.
Graduating from high school. Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's good that he's there. I don't know if he needed to do interviews about what a swell guy he is, but it's good that he was there, or it's good that he's going to be there. So, yes, Sandberg.
Dustin and Paulina had their son.
Is that why Dustin's back hurt?
No.
You get sympathy pain when.
Oh yeah.
No, absolutely. Dave was racked with pain when.
He literally was. Didn't you pass out?
No. But I had the doctor examining me while my wife was in labor because I was afraid I had strep or something. So I just had him check my
throat.
That's
a good time to ask, right?
Well, I didn't want to expose the baby to any sort of illness.
Were you just trying to get out of the room?
No, I was in the room.
Doc, I think I've got strep.
My wife was...
Karen's going, get out!
And when Amy was on the way, she showed up 7 weeks early. So we didn't have a whole lot of warning, but when she was on the way, I my feet got really tired, and I had to ask for a better chair in the room that I could sit in.
Poor thing.
Plus the screaming and the yelling and the screaming and the yelling. I don't know how Maureen could hear.
My husband went to the cafeteria three times.
He did.
Yeah.
Well, he's hungry.
You know how you can't eat when you're having a baby except popsicles.
Yeah.
He kept, I'm starving. He kept taking. I'm going to the cafeteria. I'm like, thanks a lot.
It is tough to sit in a hospital
room. I know. He was getting
bored. Oh, come on.
No,
it's tough to sit. She's giving birth.
He loves cafeterias.
Well, that's why I believe these new mobile delivery vans are going to be good.
Do you think so?
What? Like a drive-thru?
Like an app?
Yeah, it's like an app. Yeah. It's an app to have the baby.
It sounds like a food truck, doesn't it?
Speaking of food trucks, you hear what Mary just said about her husband?
Yeah.
He loves cafeterias.
Oh, no.
He loves cafeterias.
He does.
It's weird.
Is there anything in particular that he likes? I mean, cafeteria food's pretty broad there, Mary.
He just likes the variety, you know, and
so like an old country buffet is Christmas morning for him?
He's not into the old country buffet.
Isn't that a cafeteria?
Well, he had an incident there one time. But
he had an incident.
Oh, God.
Wow.
No. But he loves cafeterias. I don't know what it is.
Was it like a physical altercation?
No.
Yeah, like those fights that break out?
No.
Like did he have a thing with the cafeteria lady when he was in school?
It was stomach related.
Oh. Okay. All right.
Need I say more?
No, really, you don't need to say more at all.
Thank you.
At 6:56, a break before the news at 7 on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I think he's considering perhaps terminating the special counsel. I think he's weighing that option. I think it's pretty clear by what one of his lawyers said on television recently. I personally think it would be a very significant mistake, even though I don't think there's a justification. And even though, I mean, here you have a situation.
You don't think there's a justification
for a special counsel in this case.
That's Chris Ruddy from Newsmax, a longtime friend of Donald Trump yesterday, who opened up the news can of worms last night in regards to that particular storyline. Nothing official from the White House. A lot of stuff sourced and leaked and on background that, yeah, the White House went nuts yesterday because the president was asking various people, as he usually does, about different ideas. And this one was, should I fire Robert Mueller? Which is, in a normal world, would be the worst idea you've ever had. It's just one of the really bad ideas. So... Jim Robinoff's standing by. A legal ethics program started in Chicago, I don't know, 7 years ago. Partnered Thompson Hines Business Litigation Practice Group. I mean, along with being a tremendous lawyer, he's partnered with John Dean, guest on this show as recent as last week, of course, the Nixon White House counsel, to create a national continuing dialogue and an education program. And we'll tell you how you can find out more about that as Jim joins us now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Let's start with whether it's a story or not. Is it the worst idea ever to fire Bob Mueller?
Yeah, it's just as bad as Nixon's idea when he fired Archibald Cox in October of 1973, which was the so-called Saturday Night Massacre. After that happened, literally the next Monday in Congress, there were just droves of applications for impeachment. So it was a very difficult, tough, awful decision back then, and it would be just as bad today.
And by the way, for people just waking up, that's not what has happened, but that was a hot rumor out of the White House last night that supposedly has been shut down. Did Nixon try out these ideas on people before he did them?
No, Nixon had a very small inner circle of people that he was dealing with. And when he got to October of 1973, his trusted lieutenants, Haldeman and Ehrlichman, were gone. And so he really was running the show himself, and he made up his idea to fire Cox. And he instructed, as you may recall, Elliot Richardson, who was his attorney general, to do so. And Richardson resigned, and then the number two guy in charge resigned. And it was left to, of all people, Bork, Mr. Bork.
Yeah, Robert Bork, yeah.
Pulled the trigger. Yeah. That was Richard Nixon's decision himself.
So what we understand is the president could do this. And even though it appears he's been talked out of it, if in fact it was a discussion, it doesn't mean that he won't, because in the world we're living in, it's hard to assume really anything logical will happen here. But to me, Jim, it always comes back to the same thing. If you've got nothing to hide, the fastest way to end all of this, even now, would be to stand up and address the American people and say, wherever this investigation leads, I'm behind it. I will give Mr. Mueller full access. I will help him in any way he can, because the country needs to move on and we need answers. And he's never said that once.
Yeah, and I thought that was one of the most remarkable parts of Director Comey, former Director Comey's testimony, that the president really never asked him, what's going on? What have you found out about this Russia involvement? He was singularly disinterested in that question, and I couldn't agree with you more. Let's get to the bottom of that. That's a huge issue for this country.
Jim, who is advising Jeff Sessions? He's the top attorney in the country. If he's being advised by the Trump administration or people below him, wouldn't that be a little bit of a conflict? And are there legal repercussions if he says something damning against the Trump administration for him?
Yeah. The attorney general, you may recall, represents the United States of America, not the president of the United States. So he's got an independent duty to see that the laws are fully executed. His, you know, his big problem right now is that he's recused himself from this investigation. Given that authority to Rod Rosenstein, who, because of that recusal, probably has not really given him much advice. He's probably trying to keep him separate from all this. And that's creating a huge problem for Sessions because, you know, this is the deputy attorney general who can no longer really advise him without running afoul of that wall that really should be there between them on this issue.
Mitch McConnell's been a complete coward, on, in my opinion, on how he has handled this from a Senate leadership standpoint. Paul Ryan has tried to tap dance around it. He did at least step up yesterday and offer the criticism that firing Mueller is a terrible idea. But without Republican leadership in Congress, I'm not quite sure where the tipping point is for Trump. And with a guy with no self-discipline, I think this gets worse before it gets better.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that, to me, we're going to need some profiles and courage. I don't expect that based on what's happened. But I do think that as we go further along, and I've heard this from a lot of people who know things in Washington, the Republicans are really going to get tired of their agenda not getting through Congress and being stuck in crisis mode, eternal crisis mode. At some point, they're going to turn and say, look, I'd rather have Pence than this continuous diving into these ludicrous things. They want to get tax reform. They want to get their health care passed. And I am hearing that that is one of the big issues, along with what's going to happen in the 2018 election, that's going to really sway people.
Jim, do you see a lot of pleading the fifth, avoiding questions today, or do you expect some big bombshell that we will hear from Jeff Sessions today?
Well, the report out this morning is that he's not going to talk about his discussions with the president. And, you know, there's going to be some probably assertion of executive privilege. I don't think he's going to plead the fifth, but I think he's going to stay away from saying anything because he doesn't want to perjure himself. I mean, he's already got sort of a problem of, you know, he was not telling the truth when he was confirmed. So I don't think he wants to dig a bigger hole. My guess is he's going to be very careful about what he says.
Executive privilege is something we heard a lot about back in the day. And it's been asserted in various times, you know, going back to the 90s in different places. But explain that to me from a legal standpoint. Is executive privilege the president's to claim, or can the cabinet members claim it as well?
It is the president's to claim. If you want to really read about executive privilege, go to the United States versus Nixon case that was decided in 1974 by the Supreme Court, saying to Nixon, you must turn over your tapes and other confidential information, that your claim of executive privilege does not trump a proceeding in a judicial proceeding, a criminal proceeding. So it really is part of the separation of powers, that each independent branch should have its ability to control its own information. But our branches of government do interact with each other, too. And ultimately, the courts decide whether or not a privilege is properly asserted or not. So the president does assert it.
Talk about your partnership with John Dean and what you guys are trying to accomplish.
We started in Chicago in summer of 2011. We were at Kent Law School, Chicago Kent Law School in Skadden Arps. Our first program that we did was, we called it Watergate CLE. And it was about John Dean, imagine this, 34 years old, telling the president of the United States he's got a cancer growing on his presidency. If he doesn't stop the obstruction of justice at that point, it's going to kill his presidency. He then breaks with the president and starts cooperating with prosecutors in the Senate. So we use John as our example for all lawyers to say, what is your duty if you're representing an organization, you find yourself in the middle of crime or fraud that's ongoing? What are your ethics obligations? And that, it just took off like wildfire. We've probably done 125 programs across the country. We're going to be out in Oregon this week for the Oregon Bar Association presenting a program on executive power. And it's fascinating to present with John Dean.
Well, he's a fascinating guy. And regardless of how you feel about, if you're old enough to have these feelings or a student of history about his level of being complicit with the Nixon folks, without him, I don't know that Nixon goes down in the fashion that he does. And he served his time literally and figuratively. And I think he's a brilliant guy with really important things to say. And I'm really glad that he's also contributing to CNN so that there's a large national, if not worldwide, venue for him to talk about this stuff, because he's as close as it gets to understanding what a true constitutional crisis is.
Yeah, he is. And he had tremendous courage back then. And by the way, his testimony before the Senate is the piece that gave rise to even the discovery of the Nixon tapes.
Right.
At the time he testified, he had no idea he had been taped in all of these conversations. He thought he had been taped in just one conversation in the executive office building by Nixon, who bizarrely got up and walked to the corner of the room and whispered something to him. And he thought, man, he's taping this conversation. That led to investigators asking a guy named Alexander Butterfield, is there a taping system in the White House? And Butterfield said, I'm sorry you asked that question. Yes, there is. And that's what really led to Nixon's downfall.
Knowing what we know and seeing what we've seen and hearing what we've heard, I think if Donald Trump was on tape, I don't think he would care. I think he'd find a way to deflect it, or even Jeff Sessions. I mean, if there's some damning evidence on tape, I don't see Trump taking the same route
Nixon did. I think you have to understand that if Donald Trump were to go to jail, which I don't believe he ever will, but if Donald Trump or any of his minions were to go to jail, Donald Trump will never see this as his fault. There's a narcissistic personality disorder there like none I've ever seen. And I don't believe for an instance that he will take any responsibility for any of the negativity that he has caused and the damage that he's already created or the damage that he's yet to do.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, there's this question, are there tapes or not? A lot of people say, I don't think there are. I tend to believe that he did tape him, probably with his phone, and that people are looking at that right now, trying to figure out what the hell to do about it. Now, the problem is, the more people that know about it, and certainly any lawyers that know about it, they can't destroy it. So the question is whether they're going to try to keep it hidden or not. It's amazing to me that he hasn't said there's no tape or there is a tape and I'm going to produce it. Running this out is, to me, creating at least the impression to me that there is a tape and people are trying to figure out what the hell to do with it.
Last question before I let you go is the lack of a sense of urgency of this. To me, the single most important question, and we've touched on it briefly here, is Russia, as an enemy of us, interfered with our election. What do you do about it? How do you prevent it from happening again? And all the ancillary stuff that goes with that is equally important now, going all the way to the White House. Who was involved? What did they know? When did they know it? How is this not the number one issue for both parties every day to get an answer as fast as we can?
I mean, it should be. And I see that sanctions just yesterday were imposed by Congress in a bipartisan way. You know, the thing is, this really does make Watergate look like nothing. With Watergate, you had two American parties doing political espionage on each other, or at least one of them. Here, you have a foreign power interfering. And if that happened and there was coordination with a campaign, to me, that is one of the most serious crimes you could have in our American democracy. So I agree with you. It's priority number one.
For more on your project and to stay in touch, I guess WatergateCLE.com is the best place to go.
Yes. And I also, Chicago Review Press is my publisher. I have a book called January 1973, Watergate, Roe versus Wade, Vietnam, and the Month That Changed America Forever. So it's Chicago is my favorite town right now.
Well, and thanks for the plug on the book so we could be made aware of it as well, because we're happy to have you on anytime. Terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
Thank you, Jim. Well, how great is he?
Excellent.
Tremendous.
Absolutely excellent. He thinks there's tapes. That's very cool.
So Trump starts his phone, starts the recorder on his phone.
But he definitively thinks that there are some sort of recordings, audio recordings.
Between Jim Robinald and John Dean, they know more about this than any of us ever will. So it's great to have him as a resource. Mayor Emanuel coming up. He's got a podcast he's doing about the city that he loves. We'll get him on in a bit, and we'll talk about that coming up on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Couple of TV notes. Megyn Kelly's new show on NBC, big ratings week one with Vladimir Putin, and now a bunch of sponsors canceling over an interview with Alex Jones. Alex Jones, for those of you who don't know, that's a good thing. Is this blowhard who described himself as a performance artist in his custody trial and his divorce, who, amongst other things, said the attack in Newtown, Connecticut, where children were murdered, was staged and fake.
Sandy Hook.
And 9/11 was staged and fake.
It's sick at this point.
He's ridiculous. He's an absolute joke.
And I wouldn't give him 1 second of publicity.
Well, that's the question. Because J.P. Morgan Chase and others have bailed, said, don't put this guy on the air. It's ridiculous. You're giving him any airtime at all.
Right.
Megyn Kelly and NBC News position on this, I assume, I haven't seen their defense, but I assume is they're exposing him for the fraud that he is to minimize him at a time when he is becoming more legitimized by the Trump White House and people related to Donald Trump. And by the way, he calls the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the L.A. Times. He calls them fake news, and he grants a press pass to someone like Alex Jones.
Oh, I know.
So
it's insane.
So, I think I understand NBC or Megyn Kelly and her producer's point in trying to do this, but I would never put him on.
Oh, I wouldn't either.
Not a chance.
Even an ounce of negative publicity is publicity.
Yeah, it's just nothing that I think ought to even be considered.
You know, and I understand people have different conspiracy theories about things in life. That's fine. But Sandy Hook, when you bring children into
ridiculous.
It, there's just no excuse for that.
You can't have anything about 9/11.
No.
These are the people that think the moon landing was fake and the earth is flat.
Right.
My God, get out of the house. Turn your computer off. And for a guy who describes himself in court as a performance artist.
Right.
Do a little homework. The second TV note is Stephen Colbert from, is this last night? Colbert had Oliver Stone on last night. Oliver Stone probably jumped the shark years ago, but he's got a brand new movie out and a film, and I don't quite understand the film. Jake, do you understand it? Is he specifically doing a film about Vladimir Putin's life or just interviewing him, or what is it?
It's a whole documentary essentially about his reign over Russia. It's 4 hours long. And he spent lots and lots of time with him. I think a total of 20 hours. And they knocked it down to 4 hours, this documentary.
So here's Colbert talking to Oliver Stone about it.
When I watch this documentary, which I will do, what will surprise me most in the 4 hours that I see? About him.
There's a tremendous amount of information in it. A lot of it for the first time. We haven't heard. I can't tell you how you think. I think he's devoted to his country, and I'm amazed at his calmness, his as I said, his courtesy. He never really said anything badmouth anybody, and he's been through a lot, and he's been insulted and abused. I didn't sense any kind of abused in the press, in the media. I didn't sense any kind of anger about that.
Anything about him negative you found? Anything?
It goes on from there. I'd like to tell you it gets less awkward, but prepare to wiggle a little in your seat.
What is wrong with detente with Russia? Why would you be against it? And I don't understand this mentality of, maybe it's because you hate Trump. I perhaps can understand.
It's a strong word.
A strong word. You don't trust
Trump. Yeah, I don't trust him.
So therefore, you know, Russia is convenient as an excuse for hacking.
I don't understand why our president will never say anything negative about Vladimir Putin, given that Putin is an oppressive leader of his country who suppresses the free press and arrests his enemies. And that is not something that I, as an American or a member of the press, can respect. And I'm surprised that you do respect that.
Well, you know, I've always been for free speech.
Yes, then he doesn't seem like he would be a hero of that.
He's a... Listen, no question. He's a social conservative in that way. He believes that. I don't know why you're laughing, but it's he believes.
Because it seems like a mild description of his view. That's why they're laughing. Seems like a mild description.
So you want to insult the press? You want to insult the
audience? What is he
doing
defending Vladimir Putin?
I know. Who's going to go see that?
I don't know.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
Because we're going to pay to go see.
Why are you laughing? Because I know Vladimir's home number. I'll make a call. I'll report all of you.
And how has he been? How has he been unfairly treated by the press? Because they
my
report.
God.
They report.
He's
the atrocities.
Murdered his enemy.
Yeah, they report the atrocities, and that's what. Not fair.
The entire country is run by Vladimir Putin and a team of billionaires that are only billionaires because Vladimir Putin allows them to
right.
be.
Right. And he decides what
it's
he wants to be on the air and what he doesn't want to be on the air. It's like propaganda.
There's another story, if we get a chance to get to it later, about Vladimir Putin and a day in the life of. He apparently is quite the night owl. He gets up at 10 or 11, has some breakfast, and then after that works out for a couple of hours swimming. And then, after that, gets to work and works all evening and all night.
Wow.
Oliver Stone, like Vladimir Putin, a love story. time for your traffic, and then the mayor joins us. First, here's Mary. Joining me now in studio is Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I am fine. I got to ask you about something, because I want to talk about the podcast, because I think it's a really smart idea. But something happened in the White House yesterday that was one of the more disturbing things I've seen in months of disturbing. And you were in these meetings. When you sit in a cabinet meeting, I believe that your duty is not to go around the room and tell the dear leader what a swell guy he is. What the hell were we watching yesterday?
Let me say, I've been in hundreds of cabinet meetings, which are, you know, usually the president looks up, makes a statement, presses shoot out, and then you have a cabinet meeting. What we witnessed is something that the government of North Korea will study now and adopt. I've never seen anything. This is... thank you, dear leader, for allowing me the honor of serving you the greatness.
Saturday Night Live wouldn't have written it.
No, it's not possible. None of us actually, I think it was just like the Russians actually dubbed something, and that's what we watched, and it's right. not real.
It's a voiceover.
Because there's not, first of all, I just want to say to the cabinet, have you no dignity?
Right.
Have you no self-respect?
Right.
Right.
At least Mattis and Tillerson found a way, but the rest of them? Really?
Right.
Purdue, you used to be the governor? That's what your life's come to?
Yeah. Right.
Dear leader, thank you for giving me the honor.
And Reince Priebus threw in a blessing.
Not just to serve the country, to serve
you.
I mean, let me say this. There's never been a cabinet meeting ever held in the cabinet room like that. And
that includes Washington, Jefferson, all of them.
Okay, let me just one other thing. We have a guy who is a psychopath with bad hair and control of nuclear weapons, and he's not in North Korea. He's in Washington, D.C. There is anybody of prior administrations, Democrat, Republican, are on a phone chain and email chain like, you got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me.
Right.
We didn't watch that.
Because of the symbolism of it, the reality of what it took to make that happen and all the people involved, that's what's frightening.
All right, here's my view. I refuse to believe that happened. Okay? I'm sorry.
I don't know that denial is safe.
You know that denial's not a long-term strategy? It's a river in Egypt.
Right.
Okay.
That's where we're living.
Okay. There's just no way.
But explain something to me. Yeah. Okay, so as chief... would it be Priebus who likely went to these guys and said, we're all going to say something nice about
him? Oh, yeah. There's no way that was... First of all, it's not authentic. There was a scripted... You know, usually a president uses a cabinet meeting to make an announcement of a new policy or to say something, and then the press yells questions, and you're shoot out, everybody laughs, and then you go on to the real meeting.
The actual meeting.
Yeah. Which my guess is the real meeting was very similar to the... press part of the meeting.
Yeah, high fives for everybody. Hey, didn't we nail that?
Yeah, so it's actually, we got, ready? We're only 145 days into it.
Oh, there
is
you
that
go.
Like, we got 3.5 more years.
We could have the city council meetings be that way from now on. Alderman
I've never thought,
says
I never
something
thought
nice about you.
I don't think that's possible.
Then
I'm going to back you up on that. That's not possible.
It's not possible. Well, right. Nor would I want it.
Well, that's the other thing.
Because I'd rather say what I feel.
That's the key.
But the human being part of that is who sits around with a big dopey grin on their face, 10 people.
No self-respect.
15 people, whatever the number is, compliment you.
I have something for you.
What is it?
Okay. Amy's garden. Fresh strawberries.
This is your lovely wife.
Okay. Amy, my friend. Yeah, not the person that you, the real estate lady we just talked about. No.
Also a lovely person.
Here, pass it around.
All right.
Fresh strawberries from the garden. Plus, we have spinach and kale for everybody. But I want everybody.
But I understand this got you in trouble at home.
This is in trouble. The girls, Alana and Leia, are very upset that I'm sharing the fresh strawberries.
Spinach
and kale, they're more than willing to let you have.
That is phenomenal.
Isn't that
great?
Okay.
That may be the best strawberry I've ever shoved in my mouth. That's tremendous.
And and it makes you think like what we're eating at the grocery store? No, not there. This is real. Is that
why are
good?
We talking to you? Why don't you bring your wife in?
I told you. Amy's mad at you. Very mad at you because you have not taken her up on her shopping day to how to eat healthy.
At the farmer's market.
Yeah, she wants. No.
Mr. Mayor, with all due respect, I don't have your home number, and I didn't think it was appropriate to swing by and
a lot
go.
Of people know where I live, actually. I don't know where you live. Some of your colleagues live shots there every day.
I didn't think coming by and knocking on the door and saying, I'm ready to go shopping would be the right move.
Well, tell
your wife, please. I'd love to.
Wait a second. We have one. Is that not really good? Seriously.
That's tremendous.
Great.
And your kids are mad because we got to eat them first?
Right. There's only like 20 left of the first pick. These are the first for the season. And the kids are like,
those are tremendous.
Who's Steve Cochran?
Who are we sharing our strawberries with?
Ouch, that's painful. By the way, congratulations as a dad. You've got yourself another a graduate going off to school.
Mm-hmm. I'm very proud of her. Very. Yeah. And Zach's doing fabulous at UCLA. She's on her way to Brown. And we have one left who's informed us.
That she's done?
She's done. She's done with us, let alone school. She has one more year, but she's definitely done with us as parents already. She's voted us off the island.
The house gets a lot bigger, and you're not going to like it. You're not going to like it when they're gone.
Thing. Next week, this weekend, Father's Day.
Yes.
Yep.
I could be prouder. If I start talking, I'm going to start crying. I'm really immensely proud of
how mature
they are.
Dave gets that. I get that. Absolutely. The greatest blessing in the world is being a dad.
We're going to get a plug. Harold Green, great poet, artist here in Chicago, has following. We're going to do a celebration of Father's Day in honoring 50 fathers who've made a difference in their children's lives. And I think we got to start holding up fathers, family, whatever structure comes in. I don't really care. I just want the idea of our children raised with a family structure that gives them a foundation.
Support that 1,000%.
And we got to start holding up responsible parenting.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
It's the beginning and end of everything.
There's no question. Listen, kids aren't born evil. Kids aren't born mean. Kids aren't born to gangs. Kids aren't born to crime. Kids aren't born to bad hair pieces and a bad cabinet meeting. Kids are ruined by bad parenting.
It is, or the lack of it. And I as a father, and then as mayor, but also when I used to do this chief of staff, I've become more and more convinced as I work about I've always thought of it, given my own family, the importance of parenting, giving children a structure, a foundation, no right from wrong, good from bad. But the more and more I work as mayor, I've become more and more doubling down on my views about the importance of family and community in creating, I think, a foundation for children. And so they can grow up right.
It's really the key to the long-term success of this city, this state, and this country.
Yeah, and we don't spend enough. So Harold and I are working together. He spoke at my second inaugural. I saw him at a church on the west side.
Right.
And it was a poem all about fatherhood and the honor he has fatherhood. And we're working together to hold up, and we're making an annual event, the importance of fatherhood and what it means for children and why you should take nourishment from being a father. Emotional.
Maybe that's the unity we need to get everything done now.
Well, there's no
relate as dads.
I think we actually should demand, encourage, support responsible fathering and hold that up as a model.
You a better dad now or when your kids are little?
Well, first of all, every age and stage is different.
Yeah, to me, every 5 years.
What do you sound like? The Soviet Union. I don't have a 5 year
plan. What are you talking about? No, that was Oliver Stone.
Yeah, I would say I was a very... here's the challenge, ready? How to be an involved father without being an overbearing father.
Right. And that's the transition.
And I would say my kids... I would say I'm a good father. I mean, like this morning after I got worked out and before I left, I spent 10 minutes talking to Alana, who was just waking up, about last night, graduation, what she's going to do today, what we want to do, something that we share a common interest in furniture, the Neocon shows in Chicago, a big design show that we're going to go together. And so I would say there are days I could be better. There's no doubt about it.
I would think it's easier.
But I think, given what they've done in their lives to date, mm-hmm. I think as parents, because I don't think it's just as a father, as parents, I think Amy and I have worked hard, and right now I would say we have done well.
Well, I would think Chicago's been good for your family because it's harder to do that in D.C.
It's interesting you say that, Steve. I think it is very hard. I don't believe in raising children in one industry towns. I think when you look at New York, D.C., and L.A., given they're around single industries where kids can pick up through sixth sense, the structure and power structure of that town, I don't think that's healthy for children,
right?
Especially if you're in that industry.
Right.
And I think Chicago's a real city built around, and their grandparents, one set of grandparents are
right.
here. I think it's better to be around your family than not. The when we did live in D.C., my older brother Zeke lived a block and a half from us and back and forth, and I think that family structure is also important for children.
Sure. All right, we want to talk about your podcast. Let's get to the news, and we'll come back and talk to the mayor while he's got a couple minutes here, because you got a podcast. I think it's really smart. And is there any other mayor doing this?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay, but good. Good. We'll tell you where you can consume it.
Do you want your spinach yet?
Yeah, during the break.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
813, Mayor Emanuel in studio here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Only mayor in the country doing a podcast, the hottest form outside of the Steve Cochran Show of audio entertainment in America today. And this is an idea that occurred to you while you were swimming. I think you did Haymarket Brewery in the first one, right?
First one was two brewmasters from Haymarket, the most award-winning brewery in the United States.
So this gives you an opportunity to talk about the city mm-hmm. and to expose some stories and some folks in the city. You know what it sort of reminds me of? Remember Rick Kogan's Sidewalks column?
Yeah.
Where Kogan would go around, and it's that type of opportunity.
Well, the guys that did Haymarket, it's a fabulous microbrewery. We have coming up again this Friday Night Flights, which is we highlight six microbreweries in the city of Chicago. And then the second interview was with Barbara Gaines, who started the Shakespeare Theater. And they have the new theater on Navy Pier, which is spectacular. We had they had a Friday night reception, and it was all about her creating here in Chicago a city known for theaters and storefront theaters, a one-of-a-kind theater. And it's why she decided, coming from New York, studying at Northwestern,
right,
to create a play, a company called the Shakespeare Theater that is world-renowned now.
It's right. Fantastic. If you haven't seen a show there, it's awesome. Yeah. But Chicago, too, has become, I think we had the craft brew guys in last week, they said number two now in the nation as far as craft brews. Whole South Loop area now, and Ravenswood, too, with all the new breweries.
The second most after Portland, Oregon. That's if you want to get your brewmaster license, you come to Chicago.
Yeah.
You a beer guy or wine guy?
Beer.
And favorite? You got a favorite?
I love Haymarket.
You do?
Beer. Yeah. And I like a number of other beers. Once you start naming them, and everybody gets upset, but you didn't get to name them. Half
That's
acre.
A fair point.
There's
That's
so
a
many
fair point.
Now, though, down good. By Motor Row.
Yes, Motor Row is down there. We opened that microbrewery. They're actually all over the city, which is good. So,
well, if you need help on this, Dave could be your consultant. Dave's our hooch consultant on the show.
Well, I'm on kale also.
Do you like? Well, I also like red wine.
Oh, yeah, me too.
In episode two?
Episode two was Barbara Gaines.
This is Barbara Gaines. And where do people get it?
Are they iTunes? It's on their iTunes, and it's on there. And then I'm going to do an interview with also a principal from Curry High School. We're going to do
Good
that
call.
Today because we're getting up for graduation. Just why did she become a principal? Why?
What if the public has ideas? Like, you should tell this story. Can they send them to you?
Sure.
What, just do it through the website?
No, through you. You connect. So you and I can have a daily phone call. Why don't they just call
sure.
you?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
I'll bring you two more strawberries if you get a good story.
Right.
No, but I think actually I want people, there are people every day across the city doing really interesting things, and we should know about them.
Absolutely.
There's no question about it. So I think it's great. And the podcast is a perfect way to sit down and do it. Are you a good interviewer?
It's only two, so I don't. You should ask Barbara Gaines and the guys from Haymarket.
Well, but they like you. They're going to say yes. I mean, if somebody could sit down and be tough on you.
Yeah, because I could close down their business. Yeah, maybe I could do it like the Trump cabinet meeting. What did you think of my interview?
Right.
It was spectacular.
Thank you for the blessing of interviewing me.
I've never felt better.
Right.
And look at that hairdo you got, Mr. Mayor.
As a matter of fact, your hair still looks natural and normal. All right, so you said something yesterday, which I think is really important, because as you know, I've been very supportive of the governor trying to get something done, and I'm not a big Madigan guy.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard that about me.
Yeah.
But you said something yesterday, which I agree with. No one to say yes. There's a deal on the table that's 90% of what's there by all accounts.
Yeah.
The governor needs to say yes because you got to get a budget. We need to move on.
All right. His deputy governor, the head of all education, said in the paper that the governor got 90% of what he wanted, but he's going to veto the bill. Now, I'm sorry. We were just talking earlier. We're married.
Yeah.
You give your... Any discussion ever get 90%?
Listen, 60. You get 90%, yeah. Take it and run.
Okay, you get 90% and you're going to be on a historic that both papers acknowledge, after 20 years of debating, rewrites the school formula, which gives the governor 90% of what he wants, but 100% to the kids of Illinois and the students. And my view is, if you're getting 90%, that's how a deal is cut. First of all, if you get 60%,
yeah.
Ronald Reagan used to get... Got 60% of what he wanted, and he declared it a victory. You get 90, and it's not good enough. That's the reason nothing's happening. You cannot make perfection the enemy of progress.
Yeah.
And given that you have not signed a single bill of significant progress, either a budget, education, take the 90% and give the kids 100%. And
well, technically, 51% is a win, so 90 is a big win.
Hey, look, that's the reason Governor Ryan, Governor Edgar, I have both given this, all three of us have given the same advice as a chief executive, what it means to make an honest compromise. But if you're getting 90%, it's not really a compromise. It's a total win. So go.
And Cullerton, I feel like Cullerton has really tried to get something done.
No.
And Redonio has tried to get something done.
So here's my thing. And it is, you're saying, you know, I'm not a fan of Madigan. Put that aside.
I just did.
Okay. If you're getting 90%, if you're not taking that, there's a reason there's no progress. You own that as a governor.
Yeah, well, that's why this Madigan Rauner thing gets accused of being personal, because how could you not come to that conclusion?
Here's my advice to the governor, if he's listening. You should love Illinois more than you hate Mike Madigan. You've let your personal feelings about the speaker get in the way of your judgment. If you're getting 90% and you're still going to veto because you're angry at the speaker, you're letting your personal views color and influence your judgment, and that's not a good thing.
I'm not speaking for the governor, but can you share that message with Madigan as well?
Don't think I haven't. I know the difference between being a governor versus being a speaker,
right.
Having been in a caucus chair in Congress.
Right. Well, and I think it's important for the governor to hear. Anyway, the governor's welcome here anytime. And this would be show number 924 that Mike Madigan has refused to show up, but he's still welcome. Listen, I appreciate your time. I want to mention our friend Dean Richards. Dean is going to be hosting the opening night of the city's free outdoor film series at Pritzker. Is that tonight?
I think it is tonight. Yeah,
I think it is tonight. In Millennium Park, the Blues Brothers at 7 o'clock. It's free, and Dean will be hosting.
Oh, that's fabulous.
So, and thank you for the strawberries.
Maybe when Dean's done, he can go down the Riverwalk, have a drink, which was just highlighted in the Financial Times and on CNN as one of the great new public open spaces.
Fantastic.
It's tremendous. And for people that have not been down there, yeah. It seems like it popped up super quick. Like if you haven't even taken a walk past City Winery or anything.
No, go past.
So it's amazing.
I was there Sunday night. I had a drink after this stuff I did. Met a friend. And Mark, who owns basically Tiny Lounge down there, he showed me this video he had that on Friday nights and Saturday nights, they make more there Friday night than at their Levitt and Montrose and Ravenstar all week.
Really?
On those
just one night.
Oh, one night.
One night, they make more than all week.
Well, then it's happening.
It's City Winery. Yeah, it's totally.
And when the Apple Store opens on the Riverwalk, too, it'll be only one of four in the world, right?
Yes. Here's my prediction. In 5 years, people will be starting to say, no, I'm on the north bank of the river, not the south.
That's fair
point. A whole new language will come up because of what's happening in the river in the city of Chicago.
Congratulations on your daughter.
Thank you.
And your family?
That means...
Congratulations on marrying the right woman. It brought us great strawberries today. And please keep making the city better every day.
It's a great city.
To the best of your ability.
We just got to get a couple good radio hosts, and then we're really off to the
races. Well, listen, you never know. I mean, you can hope.
You can hope.
All you can do is hope. You know how important the word hope is?
Between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when we actually are in that moment of awe, that will be before the book is closed for the year. That's going to be my prayer.
Oh,
I love you,
sweet.
Steve.
Can we tie it all back to the blessings?
You want to hug it out?
Exactly. Bring it over. At 8:26, there's a CNBC show called The Prophet. You familiar with The Prophet?
I know the show, yes.
Yeah, and I am a big fan of The Prophet. It airs Tuesday nights at 9 in Chicago. If you're listening around the country, it's 10 East and West. And Chris Currier owns a Chicago snowboard shop and joins us right now. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you guys this morning?
I am fine. And I don't know if you were a fan of The Prophet prior to ending up on the show, but I just think it's a cool way they you know, find guys like you and then put you through your paces.
Yeah, I've actually been a fan of the show since it first aired, and that's how we kind of came to the idea of applying to be on it.
So what is that process like? You apply to be on it, then they find out what your business does, and I guess probably determine if you really need their kind of help, right?
Yeah, they do some interviews with you to determine where your business is at, if it fits kind of what they're looking for. And then one day Marcus shows up and you start going.
And Marcus, by the way, is a fan of this show and listens with some regularity, I'm told. So hi, Marcus, if you're listening now. And congratulations on another season. Now, I know we can't talk about what ultimately happens on the episode tonight, but was there anything about it that surprised you right out of the gate once you got into business with him? As in on TV?
Yeah, the biggest surprise is the pace at which he moves. Once he starts going, you've got to keep up because his mind's always moving, always thinking of the next thing. So you've just got to be ready for anything to come your way.
Mm. Were you surprised at how much money goes into all of it? Was it more than you thought?
I was surprised by everything, I guess. I've never been involved in a TV show or any sort of production like that. So start to finish, it was just an amazing process to experience.
He doesn't pull any punches, you know, and he tells you exactly what he thinks when he thinks it. How do you avoid being offended? Because I think everybody in all their businesses, and in your case, you'd go, well, what the hell does this guy know about snowboards?
And that was some of our staff's concern from the beginning, is this guy runs a totally different type of business, and he's going to come in here and tell us what to do. But once you start to see and understand how his mind works and how he can relate to a business, even if he hasn't been involved in it, you just have to start to trust the process and that he knows what he's doing, and just watch him work his magic.
I want to know, when you were working with him, he always is so crisp and perfectly dressed and nothing's out of place. And when did you ever see him look a little disheveled or anything, or does he carry himself like that on camera?
And that good.
That Tom Ford belt buckle. I mean, he's like head to toe.
He's always dressed and ready to go.
So that's the ultimate dress to impress. If I'm going to come in and tell you, here's three areas where your business sucks, do you want me to save it? I'm going to look good to start off the discussion.
Even when he's been on like a bakery episode and he's like getting his hands dirty, he looks like he could go to a board meeting and talk numbers. So.
And it's easier to take criticism from somebody who is dressed to the nines and knows what they're doing than someone who doesn't. Because there's a lot of criticism, and you have to learn to take that.
Plus, dude, you're a snowboard guy.
Right.
I'm guessing you're not a suit and tie guy at work.
In a different life, I actually used to work in finance. You may find that out a little bit on the show. So I used to be a suit and tie guy in another life.
So you see, I think this is a prerequisite for running a snowboard shop. You got to be a little laid back. Does it rise to the level of you yelling at Marcus at any point tonight?
There are some tense moments in there. There's some very tense moments. As laid back as we all are, it definitely has its moments.
And by the time the episode is over, does he know how to wax a snowboard?
He's got a good idea, at least.
Right, because that's not really his problems are P&Ls, not wax on the snowboard.
Yeah, we don't want to get any wax on those nice clothes.
So, well, good talking to you, man. I'm happy for you. I hope it works out in a positive way, but we'll see it tonight with you. And it's The Prophet tonight, 9 o'clock on CNBC, Chris Currier. And the name of the shop is?
Windward Board Shop.
And where are you guys?
We are on Clark Street, just north of Belmont.
Mm-hmm. Right, got a website you want to throw out?
W82.com.
W82.com. All right, Chris, thanks.
Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. You want to tell me now, Sandberg, how it works out?
No, I can't.
That's right.
I love The Prophet. I also liked his next show, The Partner, was also very good.
Marcus is good.
Yeah, I like his restaurant in Lake Forest.
Doesn't Marcus seem like a guy, though, that could be a paid assassin? He looks like a CIA.
Yeah, but you know, he's nicer than the guy in Restaurant Impossible who comes in and tells your business is terrible. This like, basically, everything has to go. You have to gut it. Marcus is a little nicer.
Well, I think his premise is you'll listen to me and you'll succeed, right, or you won't and this will be over.
Yeah.
Well, and the beauty of Marcus, he never loses it. He lets you look like you're the crazy person that doesn't have your act together. So
why are you smiling?
We're going to get him in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's get him in. Okay. 8:31, a big story coming up. Oh, by the way, Dean Richards will join us at 9:10. A special edition You know, I used to have after school specials.
Oh, yeah.
A special, oh, there's no school now. A special no school edition of Dean Richards at 9:10 and CLTV simulcast at 9 o'clock hour if you want to watch us as well as you listen on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Riding along in my automobile. My baby beside me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile. My curiosity running wild. Cruising and playing the radio. With no particular place to go.
I only met Chuck Berry a couple of times. Both times it was a thrill because he's Chuck Berry. And the late Chuck Berry's son, Charles Berry Jr., joins us on the phone. Chuck Berry's final release is out, and Charles is playing with the band forever. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Well, good morning, Steve. How are you?
Nice to talk to you. I was, like everybody, I suppose, a big fan of your dad, and obviously, by extension, a big fan of your own music.
Well, I'm not a guitarist, man, like my dad. I just try and play in key and be in the right, you know, the same tempo as my dad did. So, but thank you.
Yeah, and by the way, if you consider yourself a fan of the greats, you have to take a step back and understand. I don't know how your dad, I don't know how Little Richard, I don't know how any of those guys who have their music stolen and co-opted and never made the money they should have made, I don't know how they stayed as sane as they were. Not that your dad was sane, but as sane as they were.
Well, Steve, I don't know if I would call it stealing the music. Because
well, they never got paid what they should have been paid. How about that, at least?
Well, I won't say that either. My dad
was
very, very successful in his 60-some-odd years playing.
Right.
No, he didn't make $500 million like Dr. Dre or $1 billion like Paul McCartney, but he wasn't working for food. You know, he didn't have signs out.
Yeah, that's true.
Signs saying, hey, you know, he did well for himself, and, you know, he diversified. So not only was he a musician, he was also an entrepreneur. So he had quite a few business ventures. But
well, you got a great attitude about it. I salute that.
Well, thank you. I mean, so stealing? No. You know, George Clinton of the Parliament Funkadelic.
Yep.
He said it best, and he said and I'll have to say this very clearly so no one thinks I'm cursing on the radio. But he said, I want you to keep the funk, F-U-N-K, alive. So, you know, during the Parliament Funkadelic was a huge band back
in the 60s. Oh, yeah, yeah, love them.
In the early 80s, but then the rap, you know, but everything seems to fade, but then it, at the same time, it still remained. So then all the rappers came behind those guys, and he said it on MTV. That's when George said that. And so, yeah, my dad hit the boards running back in the 50s. But then, you know, there was follow-up, you know, Frankie Avalon and Fabian. All
well, but that's the thing, right? I mean, there's room for all of it. You know, that's...
Exactly. You know, but... So, you know, now they're getting all the, you know, the attention, but then the British Revolution came.
Right.
Or not the British Revolution, you know, the British invasion.
British Wave.
Stones and all that, the Wave, and they're playing all the stuff of, you know, my father, who they considered their hero.
Yep.
So that he had a resurgence in the 60s, although he was cranking out some really, you know, some fabulous hits throughout that whole period, but it kept his music alive. So no, it's too strong. Yeah, too strong. But
I stand corrected.
No, not corrected, Steve. I just, you know, stealing. No,
I get it.
They kept the music alive. You know, NASA has kept my dad's music alive. It's on Voyager 1 spacecraft. It's no longer in our solar system.
How about that? Yeah, dad's galactic.
Yeah, he's going to see the Coneheads at some point. They'll be playing his music.
Yeah, by the way, I got a chance to tell your dad he got me in trouble. I've never told you this story, Andre. I'm, you know, growing up in the 70s, little kid in the 70s when dinosaurs roamed the earth. Charles, you and I are probably about the same age, I'm thinking. And I love My Ding-a-Ling.
Oh, my God.
This is before I knew Chuck's, you know, the great Chuck stuff because I was a little kid. So I'm in school. I couldn't have been more than 10 or 11 years old. And I'm singing at the top of my dang-a-lang. My dang-a-lang.
We sang that in college, by the way.
Yeah, teacher took me aside and corrected me. Said, we will have none of that in our hallways. Your dad loved that story.
That's funny. And, you know, it was, as my dad said, he said none of his songs were dirty. They may have a little dust on them, but none of them are dirty.
All right, so when you're a kid and you want to play music and your dad's Chuck Berry, how does that work?
Well, you know, you hit me with a question I haven't been asked before. I don't know, you know, that wasn't really my interest. You know, my dad was, he was playing constantly, so I saw it from the standpoint, well, dad's constantly traveling. I don't want to do that because then I'll be away from my family.
There you go.
You know, but it took until I was 40 years old to join my dad's band. And that's after the unfortunate death of my brother-in-law, my sister Ingrid's husband, they both were in my dad's band. So he passes away. And I had to, well, no, I didn't have to, but my dad asked me to join his band. And he said it as like this, Steve. He said, you know, if you ever want to get up on stage and play, just let me know. I said, well, you know, once again, as I said previously, I didn't up to that point, I didn't even play guitar. So he asked again, and I did do it. And it's funny that I'm talking to someone in Chicago. My dad did a show with Mr. Brown, James Brown.
Wow.
If I remember right, also on that same card was Aretha Franklin.
You gotta be kidding me.
It was at the Field Museum. Oh. It was for like these really smart kids. I can't remember super smart. Wow. Like all the kids that were going to become anything and everything.
So his concert was like an award for them, a reward, I should say, for good work?
Well, not an award. They were just the entertainment culminating this whole event. Desmond Tutu was at this thing. Mary Poppins, Julie Andrews was at this.
Wow.
Looked out and there's James Earl Jones. I mean, it was, I can't remember.
How about Aretha, James Brown, and Chuck Berry on the same bill? How about that?
Yes. Yeah, and you know, so my dad closed. Mr. Brown was before us, and I think Miss Franklin came out first.
I love that Aretha was the opener.
Yeah.
But the highlight of that show for us was Coretta Scott King was there.
Wow.
And
wow, what a night.
It was unbelievable. She's just off stage. My dad and myself and my dad's bass player, Butch Dixon, Willie Dixon's son, sat in with us on piano. So we're standing off to the side of the stage, and I turn around and it's like, my God, that looks like Coretta Scott King.
How about that?
And she walks over to me and she says, baby, I'd like to meet your daddy if it's all right with you, if it's all right with them. I was like, what?
Yes, so, yes, Miss King.
Yeah. So I mean, I got my dad's attention. He turned around and I could tell he was like, wow.
Yeah, take a little bit for Chuck Berry to be starstruck.
Oh no, he was taken aback, and so he introduced himself. He says, "I know who you are, Chuck. I just want to get a picture with you and your son."
Wow.
I'm standing there freaked out. I'm like, are you kidding me?
What a good story.
I mean, one of the most important people that's ever lived in our country is she comes over so humbly, baby, I just want to get a picture with you and meet your daddy.
You know what, Charles, God, that's the only story you'd ever need. That's just it. By the way, you go to chuckberry.com. You can get all the information on, because I know, Charles, you're going to keep that website alive because you got to keep the funk alive. And
you're good.
So go to chuckberry.com, find out about Chuck. Of course, you get Johnny B. Good. You get the sequel to Johnny B. Good. I don't even want to spoil the news on that. And Douglas Brinkley, who was one of the great historians of all time, does the liner notes on this, which is very cool. Anyway, Charles, I know you got to run. I really appreciate your time. It's an honor to have you on.
Steve, thank you very much, and try to stay cool in the Windy City.
You got it, bud. All the best. There you go. How about that story?
That's incredible.
Hey, baby, I just want to meet your daddy.
I don't know if I like the Aretha Franklin story better or the Coretta Scott King. They're both awesome.
Yeah, you see Chuck Berry turns around and there's Coretta Scott King who just wants to meet him.
Right. And
pre-selfie.
And Miss Franklin.
Miss Franklin and Mr. Brown.
Yeah.
How about that? Well, that's good. Nice man. That's Charles Berry Jr., Chuck Berry, Chuck Berry's only son, as a matter of fact. And the last release of Chuck Berry called Chuck, which was released last Friday. And, you know, as a black entertainer, it's my music, man.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
It's a special edition. We'll go to Channel 9 where Dean Richards is standing by in just a second. Do you guys know if Dean's... Is Dean connected to us? Dean, give me a thumbs up if you're ready. Because I'm not sure if he's talking to Channel 9 or talking to us at this point.
He's prepping. He's getting ready. In his green room primping.
Dean is talking to Mickey Dolenz.
Oh, I can hear the newsroom. The WGN TV newsroom.
Yeah, we don't want to turn that up too much. Yeah, because we don't know what Dean and Mick are talking about.
Shh, maybe they're talking about you.
Is Dean ready? Yeah. All right, let's go to Dean now. Live at you know, Sandberg came out like 20 minutes ago, and she said, this could be a train wreck. No. Be ready to go to Dean on the phone.
Uh-oh.
I got to tell you, he looks good, though. He and Mickey Dolenz standing there on CLTV, they look good. So if you're watching CLTV and you're seeing the back of my bald head, just know that we're looking at the back of Dean's bald head.
Right.
And we'll get with him as soon as we know that
oh,
we're
there
on.
They are.
Is this a train wreck that we need to put the chopper above?
Yeah, it's possible.
Or launch the chopper.
Send
launch
Sarah
the
Gendra.
Chopper. I'll send it out.
Sarah Gendra's up.
Mickey
right
Dolenz is standing next to him and goes, this is the trouble we've always had. There's just, now they're talking again. Yeah. No, it's like,
we saw him briefly.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Let me go back to Dean now. Yeah, we don't have him.
Nice little what? I see. I told you he's talking about you.
Can we turn this up and hear him? No, see, it's not an interview.
No.
It's not an interview.
I say we just listen in to them talk about us.
We're watching Dean and Mickey Dolenz, who are preparing to be on with us. Mickey Dolenz, of course, from the Monkees.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's go back to
tell
Dean.
Tell Dan, I'm still hearing WGN.
Yeah. Could you tell Dan?
That's Dan Leister. He's the photographer's boss. He's great.
Jake, you want to take a break? We'll come back and see if we can continue this train wreck. All right, stand back. We'll crash more trains in a second on CLTV and 720 WGN.
I thought love was only true in fairy tales. And for someone else, but not for me. Love was out to get me.
Did it.
That's the way it seemed.
Did it.
Disappointment haunted all my dreams.
How good is this song?
Then I saw her face.
Live from Channel 9.
Now I'm a believer.
I still had a disc jockey timing, Dean. I don't know if you noticed.
You are precision, man.
I am. And
you're totally precision.
Who's standing next to you on CLTV and now on 720?
This is my very close personal friend, celebrity drive-by. Mickey Dolenz of
Mickey
the Monkees. Famous.
All right.
This morning. Thanks for stopping by.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Got a busy little room going here.
We pretend like we're working in the newsroom, so it looks more important.
Yeah, well, there's just nothing going on in the news these days.
No,
so
it's very quiet.
We have to keep generating more stuff.
Very, very quiet. So, what are you doing in town?
I am doing the City Winery tonight and tomorrow night. Looking forward to it. I hear it's a beautiful room.
Yeah, beautiful spot on West Randolph. Now, do you do Monkey songs? Are you doing songs, original songs? What's in the show?
Mostly Monkey hits. I always make sure the audience gets what they came for. So I do all the Monkey hits, the big ones, of course. And then some album cuts, some things off our new album, Good Times, which went top 20 last year. A few songs from there, and then, you know, a couple of surprises as well.
It's got to be so cool for you and for Peter and for Mike. After all these years, you guys get a top 20 album. That's amazing, right?
It's bizarre. I mean, if you think about it, the equivalent in 1966 would have been an act having a top 20 album that were around originally in 1916. You know, like Enrico Caruso.
That's quite the revelation that you're putting out there. But you guys still sound great. Saw all three of you at the Chicago Theater a couple of years ago. Still sounding amazing and doing great. And these so City Winery is tonight and tomorrow night.
8 o'clock, City Winery. Yeah.
All right.
And just passed their 50th anniversary.
As much as you want to talk to him some more, we have to get him ready to be on WGN TV in a minute.
All right, well, so let him go.
He's going to scoot off. I'm going to stay with you, Mickey.
Mickey, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's great to see you. The great Mickey Dolenz.
He looks great, by the way. Thank you, Mickey. Appreciate that.
And
Dean.
What else do you want to talk about, Steve?
Well, you know, Mickey and I go way back. You know, I was.
He just faded off.
I was the fifth monkey.
Yeah, but you took it a step too far, though, actually dressing up like a monkey.
Yeah,
that
and
a little awkward.
Well, the first show, I threw my own dung at the audience.
Oh,
yes. No. And that's why.
You should bring that back in your stand-up show. That would be good.
That's why we had the problems, and that's why I was eliminated. I actually have been on
Steve,
stage with
this
Mick.
Microphone. I'm going to put this on my coat so I look like a professional.
You do look like a pro. Yeah. And you look great.
I
was on stage with Mick about 25 years ago when he did a show for the station I was about to be thrown out of in Minneapolis. And he couldn't be a nicer guy.
That may be why he didn't want to stay and talk a little longer.
That's possible. It's entirely possible. Hey, thanks for...
No, he's a super nice, super, super nice guy. And I thought, as long as we're coming on with you, special appearance on CLTV this morning, that we'd do a little celebrity drive-by.
That was very nice. We appreciate that. All right, let's go lightning round because I know you got to go do your other job. Highest paid celebrities of 2017. Who is your favorite?
Who would you guess would be the number one?
Dean Richards.
Mark Sapelsa. I mean, look at the newscast he's doing.
Just missed it.
I say Dean Richards.
It's P. Diddy.
Oh.
And why? What has he done lately?
He is maybe one of the biggest moguls around with his product line. He's got clothing. He's got all kinds of music lines, all kinds of different things. He wound up taking in, I'm going to scramble for
120 million or something?
$130 million this year.
That's what we need to do. We need to develop a fragrance or something.
Right.
Or, you know.
I have a fragrance, Eau de Wacker.
Oh, is that what
yeah,
called?
It smelled like Lower Wacker.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
I would love to walk in a room and people go, what's that scent? And I just look at the camera seductively and go, it's Cochrane.
goosebumps.
Great camera take, by the way.
Yeah,
Ice Cube got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And by the way, was it the regular way or did he just go take one? Because Ice Cube, you don't mess with Ice Cube.
No, you don't. Ice Cube can pretty much do whatever he wants, but he got one the regular way. He was given a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Dr. Dre was there. You're very close personal friends. A lot of
I knew him when he was an intern.
Steve also was in the group NWA years ago.
Right.
But they had a beef. They're, you know how these rappers all have beefs. And Steve was
East side, west side, Steve side.
That's right.
Turned out
Steve side wasn't so important in the group.
Not at all.
But he was there, and John Singleton, who directed Ice Cube and Boys in the Hood, was there. And it was a really beautiful occasion.
You were saying
I have a legit question, Dean, about the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Who decides who gets a star? Can anybody buy themselves a star or get a star?
You mean like if you're Murray, the Allstate agent from
Or Flo
from Topanga
someone,
Canyon?
Or is it awarded, and would you ever get one? And I mean that very seriously.
If you've ever been to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, you can see that it's not that much of a stretch that Murray the plumber could get one. As you're walking along, you wonder, who the hell are some of these people that are on here?
Right.
And you do have to be approved by the committee, the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce, I think it is. But
it used to be $3,500. How much is it now?
I think that's the current going price.
Oh.
That if you want the star, you got to pay for the star.
So you pay $3,500 and then you got to pay for an upkeep fee. It's like maintenance fees.
Got it.
Right. I was supposed to be getting one of those stars until they heard that I've got one of already outside of Tribune Tower.
They said Walk of Fame. It doesn't get any bigger than that.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's enough.
We talked about the Lady Gaga story, so let me jump to the really big news. And we told the mayor about this when he was in last hour.
Yeah.
That you're hosting tonight's premiere. Is it the premiere? It's the first movie tonight?
It's the first night of the city's Millennium Park film series. These are the free movies in the park that they always do downtown. Now they're going to do them at the Pritzker Pavilion, and the first movie that they're showing tonight is The Blues Brothers, which is about one of the most quintessentially Chicago movies that you could possibly see. We're going to see it on a 40-foot LED screen, which is going to be amazing.
Cool.
There are classic moments and classic songs and hilarious moments in this movie. It starts at 7 o'clock. They have a little ceremony that begins at 6:30. The movie's going to start at 7. So I'll be out there as well, and hopefully everybody's going to come out. I think it's going to be a good night for it.
No, it'll be great, and then Dean's going to go
out.
How did
the mayor react when he heard that I was going to be hosting? Just his body language.
He was pretty happy.
Yeah, he teared up a little bit.
Yeah.
He teared up a little bit. And then I told him you were going to go destroy a mall immediately afterwards in honor of the Blues Brothers.
Perfect. So, exactly right.
Thanks for doing this. And by the way, we literally on CLTV went from a shot of my bald head, the back head of my, you know, to a shot of you turned around and your bald head. So I feel like we did our work this morning.
Oh, how about this?
Yeah? Huh? How about that? How about that? Right? How about that?
Yeah.
You know, you put Dean and I in a bald lineup. I don't know who you're going to pick.
Now I'm tearing up.
Yeah.
To get exactly 10 other bald guys, it looks just like a dozen eggs.
Have fun tonight. Go take a nap.
And that's not what it's
See you, buddy.
It's Matt
Steen, live from Channel 9. Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. And let's go live from Dean to an even bigger star, our friend Orion Samuelson.
I don't think I'm a bigger star than Dean. I don't think there's any way. I don't hang out with all the Hollywood stars.
No, but you know why? Because you don't have to. You don't need that kind of hassle in your life.
Well, good morning to the WGN family on the morning show. And big day for me because in about 3 hours, I'll be boarding an airplane for the first time since February to fly back to the Midwest.
I'm surprised you didn't get twitchy. You not being on a plane in 3 months, 4 months is unheard of.
Well, it is, and but the doctor said, no, stay off airplanes. And so finally, the recovery process has moved far enough along that they've said, yeah, don't do a lot of flying, but yeah, you can fly.
That's great. So, it'll be great to have you back, and you're coming back at the perfect time because summer arrived, what, yesterday morning?
Yeah, Monday, or Sunday, I would say.
Sunday, yeah. So
county and state fair season underway, and all of the community festivals that I have missed so far, like Harvard Milk Day and Blossom Time Festival, but I'll be back in time for the other festivals coming up in the county and state fair season, which is always a good time.
I don't know that they could have the sandwich fair without you being there.
Well, we're going to be there. Max Armstrong will be there on one day. I'll be there on the next day at the opening of the fair. And people always say, when does the sandwich fair, what are the dates? Always the Wednesday after Labor Day.
Yeah.
So look at Labor Day, and then the Wednesday after Labor Day is when the sandwich fair gets underway.
Yeah, so that makes it easy to remember. And along with your continued good health, does this mean you're going to jump back in with a full Orion schedule?
Pretty much so, yeah. Because the doctor said get back to doing what you do all the time because you need that kind of a routine to get things back to where they should be. So I won't be moving quite as fast as I did, but I think that'll come too. But the legs are still a little shaky. So today will be my real test when I have to walk at Phoenix Airport and when I have to walk at O'Hare. That'll be a real test with my legs.
I tried to reach Orion this weekend. I spoke to his nurse, Nurse Gloria, and
yes.
She said he's been a model patient. She said that he has behaved respectfully and that, he's losing his mind sitting around, and he wants to get back after it. And she had previewed the fact that you were on the verge of getting back to activity. So I'm very happy for you, and I know I'm happy for Gloria, too.
We're happy for Gloria Orion, and we're going to all take her out for drinks as a thank
you.
Boy,
I hope so, because I couldn't have done this without her. She, as a matter of fact, when we go back to Mayo's twice a week for dressing changes and things like that, the nurses and the doctors say, "My golly, are you a professional nurse?" Because she has done so well.
No doubt.
And continues to do well. And I'm not sure I've been the best model patient, really, because I get a little disturbed sometimes. We have to go back to the hospital again today for a dressing change.
Yeah, feisty. I understand. When you come back, as soon as you're up for it, we'd love to have you back in studio because the people here miss you.
Well, you know what? I will get there as soon as I can, but while I was out here, my driver's license expired. So I can't drive until I get my driver's license renewed.
Criminal.
Yeah.
I can't believe at this point of your life you've finally gone to the dark side.
Scofflaw.
Yeah. And Gloria has done, besides all of the nursing duties, she's driven. Drives me everywhere we go because I can't drive.
Look at that. It's not driving Miss Daisy, it's driving Mr. S.
Gonna have to get your own Uber driver, Orion.
I don't think I'll go that far.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Show with Miller Grayson in the grass.
What a trip. 9:44, and regardless of what we're talking about, it's nice to see a friendly face. Tom Scherer.
Yeah.
A broadcast legend who gave up the swinging, swirling world of show business, went out and started his own company, and then gave up that for the comfortable work in the government at a low-impact office like the county assessor's office. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, we don't
why would you do that?
We don't do anything over there. 1.8 million pieces of property.
I'm 1.85, but who's counting?
That's well, you have 500,000 of them yourself, don't you?
Well, sure I do.
Yeah.
And out of the 1.85, is it 1.6 or private property or 1.7?
Yeah, 1.5 million homes approximately, 1.85 total props, and those 300,000 plus business properties help offset the tax burden on the residences in the area.
All right, so let me start there.
Especially Chicago.
Because you guys had a press conference and pointed out all the things you have issues with the Chicago Tribune story.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, a reporter who I know you respect,
because
he's a good reporter,
yes,
a guy named Jason Grotto and Ray Long also helped with the follow-up, wrote a story that's very negative about the work coming out of the county assessor's office. Let's start with the technology.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main complaints seemed to be that you guys are not technologically up to 2017.
Right.
Is that fair?
Yes and no. The overall computer picture, that is a fair criticism. In fact, the county has entered into a big contract with Tyler Technologies to revamp everything, get off of the mainframe, which dates back to the late 70s. So that's true. But it doesn't inhibit the job that we can do at the assessor's office. We have a lot of computer technology that allows us to assess 1.85 million pieces of property with fewer than 300 employees. When Joe Berrios took over, we had around 388. We're down to about 290 now. That's pretty good, trim, efficient government.
Are you understaffed?
No. We have a few people. We could use a few more people, but we understand county budget restrictions. And President Preckwinkle has been very supportive of the agency. So this is not a technological issue. This is a matter of opinion. The Tribune ran a sales ratio study that wasn't run by assessment professionals. They worked hard, good math skills, I should say. But their sales ratio study was not countywide. Courts have ruled that sales ratio studies should be countywide. Also, very importantly, it included estate sales. They trimmed out the other outliers, but they included estate sales. So you see examples in the paper of three homes that we said it's worth X dollars, it sold for less, so we must be wrong. We must be overvaluing. In fact, they were estate sales. We released all the details yesterday. I personally talked to one of the sellers and the seller's attorney and said, what happened there? Well, they didn't want to fix the house up for sale, paint wallpaper. They didn't want to wait 2 months to list it and sell it. They needed their money now. They wanted to get out, so they sold for a lot less, and that was the decision. We found many cases like that the Tribune cited as so-called normal sales, which they weren't.
Well, the overriding premise of the Tribune piece seems to be that the appeals process is not just something that works in favor of people if they choose to exercise it, but the appeals process is the fallback position. It's the default. In other words, we're not sure we're going to get it right. Mm-hmm. Go appeal it.
Right.
That's not a way to run an office.
And that's not the way we run our office. Not at all. That's a misrepresentation. I'll tell you why.
But do you disagree that that's the premise of the piece?
The premise,
because that seemed to be what jumped out.
That is the premise of the piece, that we rely too heavily on appeals.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If people choose not to appeal, then that's making the appeal system flawed.
Because get it right the first time would be the answer.
Well, see, that's...
Or as close to possible.
That's what a lot of people don't understand, is get it right or get it fair.
Yeah.
And this is what I mean. The assessor's first figure for businesses is just that, a starting figure. Then they have to come in and show certain documents. And businesses...
And that's fair.
Yeah, and that's assessed differently than personal property. Homes are... You're taxed on 10% of the home's value. Businesses are taxed... the tax rates, which the assessor doesn't set. He doesn't set the tax rates or the levies. That's applied to 25% of a business's property. They pay a bigger chunk. So the business property is a first proposal. Then we look at any information, and if we need to change it, we will. But for homes, here's the key. The appeal is not a fallback position or having the taxpayer do our work for us. The appeal is a key step in the late stage of the assessment process. Look at it this way. There are 1.55 million pieces of residential property.
Right.
Only a fraction of them appeal. Now, that's not because they don't know how to appeal and don't want to appeal. That's because the figures are pretty much on target. It's a computer-aided mass appraisal system. So...
Well, is it because they're on target, or is it because people don't want to mess with government? And that's not an excuse, by the way. If you want to appeal, you ought to appeal.
Right. There may be people who don't want to mess with government. I can tell you this. I appealed every year when I had a house in Glenview. I was lazy and a little stupid, and I used an attorney every year. Okay. I finally did it myself one year and did even better. You don't need an attorney to appeal. You don't need to pay a fee. You don't need to do any research. We'll get the comparables for you. So it's easier to appeal than people realize. Burials expanded the website. It's easier to do online. So it's not this big monster that people think. But your original question is a key question, Steve. Why do we need appeals?
Right.
That's the voice of the taxpayer. They have to have a voice in the process. The previous assessor, Jim Houlihan, whom Jason Groudle wrote about today in the Tribune, who made an awful mess of things, Berrios is still cleaning up Houlihan's mess, he didn't like appeals. He wouldn't give any relief on appeals because he didn't want to say his figure wasn't right. Okay, you had to go to the Board of Review for Justice, the next step, and there was a huge backlog up there. Berrios was on the Board of Review for 22 years. He said, I'm going to fix this. He became assessor 7 years ago. Appeals are up because it's a fairer process.
But is it an overcorrection now for what the previous didn't do right?
Well, everything we do in the wake of the Houlihan administration has been a correction. Overcorrection, maybe in the early years, but we think we're getting it right. If we had 4,000 employees to go to every property in the county every year, great. That would cost the county $260 million. Instead, we use the appeal. If you think you need it, that will help.
And by the way, the onus should be on the taxpayer. The onus should be on the taxpayer to say, I have something I need to question. Yeah. I want to come back to this for a second, but Andrea, jump
in. Couple questions. Sure. First of all, why are 75% of the appeals overturned? Doesn't that show that there's something flawed with the process, that unless you appeal, you're going to get screwed?
Well, it's not 75%. At the assessor's office, it's 50%.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean...
High.
Well, yes, but it doesn't mean we had you wrong by $50,000 of what we say your house is worth. It could be a reduction of as little as a couple thousand dollars. We say your house is worth $100,000, we lower it to $98,000. It's impossible to have, and even the Tribune said this, no mass appraisal system is exact. It's not an exact science. There's a reasonable range. The higher rate is if you go to the Board of Review also. The Board of Review has a different set of guidelines that they're allowed to legally follow. What we do, and this is one of the big things that I think people would misunderstand from reading the Tribune's piece, we don't say this house sold for $100,000, that's what it's worth. The Supreme Court of the United States has ruled we can't do that. That's called sales chasing, and it violates the constitutional right to equal protection under the law. It's a little convoluted. Here's what it means. We take that sale and all the sales of similar homes in your neighborhood over a 3-year period. We come up with an average value per square foot. We multiply it approximately times the square footage in your house, and that's your value. If people say, well, you said it's worth this and it sold for that, you should have said that. That's sales chasing, and it's unconstitutional. Can't do it. But over 3 years, that sale and others play a role in the big picture in your neighborhood, and that's how we come up with your reassessed value every 3 years, up or down. And that protects homeowners from the ups and downs of the real estate market.
But is there too much dependence on comps?
No, sales prices are exactly every. If you sell your house for $100, the guy next door to you sells for $200. The guy on the other side sells for $150. That average is somewhere in there. If they're the same square footage, you know, that sort of thing.
Why is it so subjective though? Why so subjective? Because I live in a condo building, and and say Steve and I have the exact same square footage, give or take maybe 10 square feet or 20 square feet. My assessments are not twice what his are, but a lot more than his. Why isn't there so much inconsistency?
Well, each building is different, has its own characteristics, and that's why condo associations appeal all the time.
Right. We have to hire a lawyer. We don't have a choice.
Yeah. In fact, the Tribune reported that there's a certain number of appeals every year. The residential appeals, the actual file, is only 155,000 out of 1.5 million. That's less than 10%. But that each, some of those files include, you know, 30, 40, 50, 100 condo units within one appeal file. That's because every unit is unique, every unit is different, or every building, I should say.
Right.
That's why the appeal process is important, to tell us that. We think we have it pretty well figured out, considering that we're doing all this property. But we don't think we're perfect. We want to get to the appeal as part of the late stages of the process to get to the fairest figure, which is our legal requirement. And we're not afraid to change a figure, but we're also not going to say, well, we're wrong because the Chicago Tribune says we're wrong.
Okay, but here's I got to go to break. I'll come back, and I got a couple other things to run by. Again, Tom Scherer's the guest, and you and I know Tom. Dave, you know Tom. Mm-hmm. Tom's a bulldog. Tom's going to do his homework, and I don't doubt that your stern belief in any of this, but I think, to be fair, I think what Grotto wrote has created a lot of questions that need to be answered, which is one of the reasons I'm glad you're here.
It has, and I'll leave you with one thing before the break. It's really important. The Illinois Department of Revenue has the right, the legal right, to order us to reassess the county if they think we've done it wrong. That's never happened since Joe Berrios has been assessor.
Okay.
And it happened in another Midwestern state. Their sales ratio study shows that we're at 10.16 3-year average. The goal is 10, so we're doing a pretty good job. The state equalizer has gone down since Berrios has been the assessor by a wide margin. So that's another indication. But as I said I'd say one thing.
Right. Well, it's hard. I get it. 9:54, back with more in a moment on 720 WGN. Tom Scherer is here. We've told your story on the air before, but I want to give Tom a chance to address this. When it comes to customer service, Jesse White is rightfully proud of how he's cleaned up the driver's license
offices.
Fantastic. Right, right.
A great, great man, Jesse White.
Andre had a terrible experience, which we don't need to tell a story again, but a terrible experience in trying to get an appeal
done.
Just
took a couple of years to get
it. What can you tell people about the appeal process in the assessor's office?
Right. Well, I listened to Andrea's story, and I can tell you that the employee who handled her appeal initially no longer works there.
Right.
I can tell you that the appeal process under Berrios has been opened up tremendously. I can tell you that you'll find customer service waits are a fraction of what they used to be. Under Jim Houlihan, people were waiting 45 minutes held in holding pits down in the first floor of the county building or second floor. That doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
Busy season, we get you taken care of within 20 minutes, maybe 25. The non-busy season, such as now, under 10 minutes. So the process has been improved tremendously. Berrios has been, and Joe Berrios, the assessor, and I work for the Cook County assessor, so I'm going to say great things about him. But I can tell you this, I don't need this job. I could be gone tomorrow and be quite happy. I wouldn't be there unless I believe what I say, know it to be true, and witness it every day. His attitude is, look, I've been in this for 37 years, 22 years in the Board of Review as a commissioner up there. I've seen the problems in customer service. I'm going to fix it, and that's what he's done. And the whole appeal thing is kind of interesting. I'll give you a quick example. The Tribune compared us to San Francisco. They have fewer than 5,000 appeals a year there, and they had a very self-serving comment from the city assessor saying, well, we want to get it right the first time so our people don't have to appeal. Well, what she conveniently didn't tell them, and what nobody reported, even though we told them, is that, and I'm not citing one media outlet. Nobody talks about that. They say, oh, San Francisco's great. There's a thing out there which Steve and I remember well, probably Dave. You're too young, Andrea.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Proposition 13.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Prop 13 limits increases in valuation to 2% a year. So you buy a house in San Francisco, unless the house is sold. You buy a house for $300,000, hold it 10 years. They're going to assess you at about $364. That's your value, market value.
Right.
That house is worth a million or more.
Right.
If I had a house worth a million, and I was
taxed at $350.
Sure.
I would never appeal. That's why in California, everywhere, there aren't a lot of appeals.
Right. So there's not. It's not a fair comparison. It's not an apples for apples thing.
Right. But here,
all right, look,
here
we're out of time. But here's the deal.
Yep.
We need you to come back so
we
can spend some more time on this.
Yep.
Obviously, I'd like Joe to come in.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, and we got to discuss the Pritzker thing too, because as you know, because you love this town like I do, people have an opinion of politics and city offices that I'm going to get jobbed. So we're going to leave it there.
Okay.
Read the Tribune story. Read the follow-up.
Can I say
but
this?
Here's this just, one sec.
Yep.
The podcast for this, if you missed any of it, available later today. Because I think you did a good job of defending the office. We just have more questions, and we're out of time.
And we should answer those questions, and we will. On Pritzker, we didn't even know that it was his property because his name doesn't appear in the file.
I get that, but it's really hard for people to believe that a property of that value, at least in conversation in the office, doesn't come up.
Well, the last thing I can tell you is to the minority community, this message from Berrios and the entire agency. We have a very diverse staff.
Yes.
We're out in the community doing hundreds of outreach events, 77% of them in the minority community. We've added 66 more starting July 1, which was our plan all along because it's our new year. We measure it every 12 months beginning July 1. We would never do anything unfair to the minority community. We're targeting it. We have always targeted it, and all people. We're up on the North Shore all the time, too. So we want to be responsive. Contact us. We will be back here, and thank you
I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming in, Tom. Well, I really do.
WGN's always been a full-service station, and this is an example of it.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate you coming
in. Thank you.